שווארמה, שווארמה, שווארמה.
כולם הלכו לקניון החדש לשתות קפה, לראות אנשים. כולם אוכלים פופקורן עכשיו, ורק אני בחדר שלי רוצה להיות איתך לבד, לבד, לבד. אני ואבי כל החבר'ה רוצה לצאת איתך בלי אף אחד אחד, שיעצור כל העולם המסחרי. כולם הלכו לקניון החדש, ורק אני לבד בחדר, ומשקר שזה בסדר. כולם הלכו לקניון החדש, שותה לי ספל תה עם רענה, שוכב ומסתכל למעלה. כולם הלכו לקניון החדש לראות סרט, לקנות שטויות. כולם לובשים חולצה חדשה, ורק אני בטרלינג רוצה להיות איתך לבד, לבד, לבד. אני ואת ללא רשתות שיווק, רוצה להיות איתך עלי בודד, בודד, שיעצור כל העולם המסחרי. כולם הלכו לקניון החדש, ורק אני לבד בחדר, ומשקר שזה בסדר. כולם הלכו לקניון החדש, שותה לי ספל תה עם נענה, שוכב ומסתכל למעלה. אומרים שיש מיתון עכשיו, אם יש מיתון אז הוא בלב שלי. כולם שותים עכשיו מיץ טבעי, ורק אני עכשיו מצטער על הכל. כולם הלכו לקניון החדש, ורק אני לבד בחדר, ומשקר שזה בסדר. כולם הלכו לקניון החדש, שותה לי ספל תה עם נענה, שוכב ומסתכל למעלה.
אומרים שיש מיתון עכשיו, אם יש מיתון אז הוא בלב שלי. כולם שותים עכשיו מיץ טבעי, ורק אני עכשיו מצטער.
kabab 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 kabab
kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab
kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab
kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab kabab.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM on your FM dial. This is Ink Studs, and I am joined this week by Miriam Libicki. Libicki, did I pronounce it right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, I'm just going to get you a little closer to that mic there.
How?
It's a little menacing, I know.
Like that?
Like, about as close as I am. Sibilance, sibilance. Can you hear yourself under your headphones?
No.
You want to show her where the headphones things are, Colin? There we go. CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Ink Studs, the radio show about comics. We're just sort of slacking on getting ourselves set up. This week we're joined by, like I said, Miriam Libicki. No, I mispronounced it.
No, you got it right.
I got it right. All right. Giddy, giddy. It's Thursday, 2:00 something. Wow, the clock here's way off. 2:07. This says 7:06 or something crazy. And we're going to talk about Miriam's project, Jobnik, exclamation point. Very important to remember the exclamation point. And also her grad show, art show coming up at Emily Carr. We'll chat a bit about that. And tell us about the music we were just listening to.
Well, it's an Israeli band called Tipex, or in English it's called the Tipex.
Tipex in Hebrew means whiteout. But I don't know if they chose the name because it also sounded like an English word, or almost an English word, which is Tipex. But that's what they call themselves in English. And they're a pretty established band. They're not very well respected because they're kind of silly. But they've been around for a long time.
Well,
this is, I think, their most recent album.
It's the Ink Suds. You got to be still in here. And that was off the album you'd mentioned called Sitting in a Coffee Shop.
Yes.
And the name of the track was, I love this, Everyone Went to the New Mall.
Yes, the New Mall.
That's awesome. A lot of humor in that name. We like humor here. Humor's good. If you don't have humor, what do you have?
The importance of humor is underrated.
It's underrated. So, Job Nick, it's a pretty interesting comic, and I have a bunch of questions about it. For those unknowing listeners that don't know about Job Nick, tell us about it.
Well, it's the story of an American girl from a traditional religious Jewish family who goes to Israel and joins the army. Basically, the series starts upon her enlistment, and it's going to continue on through a year and 9 months of the tour of duty until the discharge.
And this is autobiographical?
Yeah, it's based a lot on my experiences where I was an American and went and joined the Israeli army.
Nice. Sounds like a fun thing to do when you finish high school. And hey, actually, you know, the funny part is my sister actually, when she finished high school, she went and did basic training for the Canadian Army. What's up with that? I don't know.
She just went to basic training, or she serves in the Canadian Army?
Just basic training. Just
That's
like Army for the summer.
So was joining the Army part of becoming an Israeli citizen?
I went there for a year program initially, and during that year I decided to become an Israeli citizen. I decided that was where I was meant to be, and going to the army was part of that for me. Legally I didn't have to, because I became an Israeli citizen at age 18, so past that point they don't really recruit you, if you're a girl at least. But for me, I felt that if I was making the decision to go to Israel, then I should join the army, just like my friends were doing, just like other Israelis who are 18.
So it was a big part of the Israeli identity, I imagine.
Yeah, I think it is. There are many parts of Israeli society that are affected by the prevalence of the army and the military mentality. People are very tough there.
I couldn't imagine, like, the Canadian equivalent where, like, what are the exact rules with, like, adolescents going into Israeli army? Like, it's a legal obligation?
It's supposed to be a universal draft. I mean, there are ways you can get out of it if you show that, like, mentally, you know, psychologically you're unfit and you don't have a military-type temperament, or religious... girls who are religious can also choose to opt out because, you know, the religious groups say it's no place for a, you know, nice girl. But some still do it. So especially if you're a woman, it's much easier to get out of your army service. But it is technically supposed to be universal draft.
Now, the move to Israel, going from, you're saying before, your roots are in... beautiful Ohio.
That's it.
Did I get right? Beautiful Ohio?
At least the Ohio part.
The Ohio part? Oh. We were chatting earlier about Cleveland and stuff, and Colin's interest in the city of Cleveland. Yada, yada, yada. You're 18 when you moved to Israel.
I was 17 when I moved to Israel.
Okay, and there, now, you were in the army there for a year and 9 months. Now, did you go directly in the army, or did you kind of like bum around, kind of check it out?
Well, I went there for a year program initially, so that was not the army, and trying to get its citizenship and then trying to get into the army basically took up another year. So I had just turned 19 when I enlisted in the army. where I finally got drafted.
Now, you have this other book that's part of your grad project, Towards a Hot Jew, the Israeli soldier as a soldier fetish, as a fetish object, a drawn essay. And I'm just wondering, part of the move to Israel, was it a kind of form of creating like a bit of a self-identity, like finding more of your own personal cultural identity that was maybe in the United States kind of washed back?
Well, it wasn't so much a cultural identity. Like, I grew up in a religious community, and I went to a Jewish day school, like a religious Jewish school, from kindergarten through high school. But I think it probably was kind of trying to find my own identity, like to not go right into college out of high school just because that's what everybody did. I wanted to, you know, have a reason if I was going to go to college.
You wanted to kind of avoid the, now this is a phrase you use in the book, the Jap image. I'm just saying it because it's used in the book. I don't know if I like it as a phrase, the Jewish American princess, just kind of like to get away from that and kind of like go and see what is out there. And
I guess, yeah, I never felt myself much like a Jap because my parents are kind of hippies. But definitely I wanted to kind of get out of, you know, my understanding and my comfort zone and into a more unfamiliar environment just to learn more about the world and more about myself.
Okay. So Jobnik's a comic. When you were stationed doing this service, tour duty, whatever, while you're doing it, were you like thinking like, man, this could make a great comic? Or is that something later, when you came back to, you know, North America and gone to art school, kind of revisited that idea or created that idea?
Yeah, it wasn't something that I had in mind while I was in the Army, although luckily I did take a lot of photographs, which are helping me now with the comic. I didn't do a lot of drawing in the Army. It was mostly more taking photographs, and I hadn't really thought about creating comics basically before I did it, before I did my first Jobnik story, which was just basically took a diary entry of mine and adapted it into a 5-page comic. So I always liked comics, but I didn't think that I had the discipline to make them, like to sit down and to draw the same character, you know, 20 times in a row.
Comics is hard.
It's very hard, because I was into figure drawing, and I was into drawing a lot, and portraiture, but, you know, you don't have to create consistent characters when you do that. But it's through this story, and through the idea that I would like to tell this story of me in the Army, or a story based on the story of me in the Army, was when I found out that I could actually do comics.
A self-awakening of sorts.
Great.
So, comics. Did you read comics as a kid?
Yeah, I read lots of comics, like, from since I know, you know, since ever since I could remember, I've been reading comics. I had an older brother that collected lots of Marvel comics, the X-Men and New Mutants and things, and so we were always very into those. And I got into indie comics more when I was a teenager. We were talking earlier about Dave Sim,
which normally, like, I don't, when I interview people, I don't go like, what's it like being a female doing comics? My question is, what's it like being a female reading Cerebus?
It's pretty nuts. I mean, I do, I guess it's a testament to his talent that he makes me so upset and still makes me want to read. But yeah, there are definitely things that I've taken offense to in his comics. But it's just so interesting to get into his mindset, which is insane.
Well, it's a little scary.
Yeah, it's a little scary. And I don't know if I'd like to meet the guy. Like, sometimes I think I would, but sometimes I think I wouldn't.
He's a really nice guy. I mean, he's always been nice to me.
That's what people say. You just don't ask him about his beliefs.
Or I've feminism.
I've talked to him a bit about it, but, you know, it's just his mind's made up.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know who Dave Sim is, because it used to be everyone knew who Dave Sim was, but because of his ongoing insanity, He's kind of like gone away into obscurity. But Dave Sim was the creator behind Cerebus, and basically he started and said, I'm going to do 300 issues. You know, yep. Last issue is going to end with him dying. Sorry if I ruined the ending for people that haven't finished reading it.
He's just sleeping.
He's just... Bun Bun. Where's my Bun Bun? Bun Bun just sleeping. That was an old Henry Rollins thing with... Yeah. Sorry. Had an awe loss. But yeah, Dave Sim, his comic started out being really incredible, really pioneering, still incredible, but then he went at one point where he spent 20 issues retelling Genesis, I think is what it is, in the most...
And it's kind of a classic schizophrenic thing where, like, you think people are trying to send you messages, like they're going to send you a message to this TV show. And so he basically, it almost does seem like he thinks that God is speaking to him through, you know, weird interpretations of the Bible and also of different, like, science, like embryology. God is speaking to him through embryology.
I haven't heard that one.
Yes, it's... I guess he was into embryology to prove his idea of the creation of the universe, because he gets into that also. Like, he's going to tell us, you know, what the Big Bang was and what's behind, you know... He has his universal field theory in the last book.
Dave Sim is behind the Big Bang.
Well, I am rather curious about how people are taking it, because I know that Dave Sim was a huge influence on a whole generation of cartoonists, and I just wonder how they're dealing with, how you're dealing with all this, the insanity.
Well, I think for me, it's I shouldn't try to come out with a book every month, because I think he has even said that that's one of the things that drove him around the twist, is that he, like you said, he committed to 300 issues, and he was going to come out with one, you know, 20-page comic every single month.
I think Gerhardt at one point snapped and was, like, walking away.
Yes.
Dave managed somehow to talk him into staying.
Yep.
Gerhardt, the guy who does all the backgrounds.
And I think, I mean, maybe it gives people, maybe it gives me, that you can tell kind of a very personal, you know, so, and idiosyncratic story as long as you have a basic integrity, where you're just working as hard as you can and whatever you're most interested in. You know, that's something that I do like about Dave Sim, is that he certainly doesn't cater to the market.
No, he's doing it all on his own.
Yeah.
Now, you have a stack of CDs here. It's about 20 past. I think we're going to play another song. Maybe you try and do it every 20 minutes or so. Now you have, let's see, we got Joni Mitchell, we got Queen, and then we have Warren Zevon.
Yeah.
Or The Moxie.
That's
do you
want
to play The Moxie?
Okay.
We got The Moxie.
Moxie Fruvis is why you're here.
Moxie Fruvis is why I am in Canada. Basically.
What track am I playing off the Moxie?
14.
14?
It's very topical.
And
I'm
this is
sorry.
And it's CanCon, people. CanCon. Moxie Fruvis. I haven't listened to Moxie Fruvis since, like, who knows?
Sometimes I just turn on the CBC and look at Gian Gameshi.
On that note, Moxie Fruvis, CITR 101.9. If you have a question for Miss Miriam Lubicki. Do you want to take questions if someone has a question on the phone?
Sure. I'll try.
604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR.
Baboon, big baboon, big baboon, big baboon, big baboon.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Hey there, there goes the Spider-Man. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Shooby-Doo, rock steady crew, find him an octoped on with flare hair. There goes the Spider-Man.
In the heat of night, at the scene of a crime, with the speed of light, he arrives just in time.
Well, no red blooded boy or girl would miss this Saturday's appearance of Spider-Man down at the local county fair, unless, of course, they're at home with their collections.
Spider-Man's master plan, build his own little spider clan in the woods. Now they're troops fighting for special interest groups. Look out where, wherever there's a bang, you'll find a great big hang. You'll find the Spider-Man.
My spider sense is tingling. It sure is. In such films as Spidey Goes Speed Racing, Spidey Hawaii, Spidey's Girl, Spidey My Pal, Spidey the Underwater Adventure Seeker, Spidey the Fun Licker, Spidey A Drink for All Ages.
What is Spidey the Fun Licker?
That
I find mildly disturbing, Moxie Fruvis. Mildly disturbing. You have made me uncomfortable. Go back to CBC News. I'm kidding. I'm just being facetious. That was Moxie Fruvis with the Spider-Man song off their album Bargainville, a Canadian classic, let's say. Moxie Fruvis, who I'm sure haven't existed in 10 years. Well, no, you're saying...
2000, they broke up, I believe.
2000. See, I don't even know what happened to them since, you know, 94.
Well, Murray the bass player is in Great Big Sea now. And Gian is being a CBC personality.
And making a lot more money now, probably,
doing
too.
Doing their own projects. I don't know. I don't know how much money he's making.
Why not? Don't you have his bank statements?
Aren't you a frou head?
I am a frou head, but I guess I never got into the bank statements.
Colin and I were very shocked. We did not know such a thing existed, the frou heads.
That's right.
The Moxie Fruvis, there's a following of Moxie Fruvis, Moxie Fruvis conventions.
Yeah.
I was pretty impressed.
It's a whole nother world.
It is.
Yeah, they used to tour in the Midwest a lot, and they would come down to Columbus, Ohio, because it's kind of a big college town, and, you know, we're into alternative and silly stuff. And so I actually did semi-follow them around when I was in high school, that is where I met my Canadian boyfriend, who... So, you, like we pointed out, Moxie Fruvis is, in a way, the reason that I am in Canada right now.
All right, Moxie Fruvis, bringing us the talented Miriam Lebicki. Lebicki?
You keep saying it right.
Okay, I just...
Damn
you, McConnell! Creator of Jobnik! Exclamation mark, and you also have a website, Real Gone Girl Studios?
No, realgonegirl.com.
Realgonegirl.com. If you want to check out Miriam's stuff, realgonegirl.com. She's also a regular at most of the comic conventions. Wasn't at the last one.
Yep.
Too cool for school, or too cool because of school.
Yeah, it was because of school. I am graduating from Emily Carr this Saturday. Thank you.
Of course, all the best artists drop out, like me.
Well, I've got, you all know, 2 days to drop out.
Just give it all up now, and then you can be the next Colin Upton.
That's right.
Awkward silence. So your grad show. Tell us about your grad show. We were discussing it earlier at lunch, and I think everyone needs to know.
Well, the Emily Carr grad show, the opening is this Saturday night at 7 p.m., and it's going to go on for about 2.5 weeks after that. I think May 22nd is the last day. And mine is going to be kind of it has some comics to it. It's going to be a slideshow of images with words, like drawings that I made. It's going to be this essay, Towards a Hot Jew, the Israeli Soldier as Fetish Object, as a slideshow shown large on the wall. So it's going to be sort of like a comics experience, but also like a gallery experience in that it's big and on the wall.
So what's it like being a cartoonist in an art school in the Emily Carr these days?
Well, I kind of learned in second year to keep my cartooning separate. Like, the first few comics I did were for classes, and I got some good responses, but once I got higher into, you know, more studio classes and had to be more serious, like stuff that I did that was influenced by comics or had elements of my comics in it would get pretty brutal crits. Like the critiques would be bad. And so I just kind of stopped bringing in my comics. And it made me even more determined to do my comics, but just not bring them into school. And at school, I just do, you know, large paintings. The grad project was sort of the first time when I brought my comics back into the gallery setting. And I didn't try to make them more artistic or have different, you know, sensibility than my comics have. Even though it is a different style of drawing, I just decided what will make them relevant is to make them giant. as we learn from Roy Lichtenstein that, you know, comics are relevant if they're very, very big on the wall. And so that's what I did. And I actually got pretty good response. People were still confused by the idea that you look at pictures and read words at the same time. There are still people who feel that they cannot do that.
In an art school in this day and age?
Yeah, they were like, couldn't you just say all that just through your pictures? I was like, no, you have to read. Suck it up.
No, what you got to do is like this, it's an artist statement with all these bizarre words and very complicated philosophical things that mean nothing.
Uh-huh.
You mean French philosophy.
I've got a little bit of art speak in my drawn essay. There's a few dropped names.
Mm.
Those are important.
You even made a reference to Joe Sacco, and I noticed.
Yes, reference to Joe Sacco. Also reference to Mad Magazine. Oh, no, I did. That one didn't make it in there. I couldn't find the Mad Magazine.
Aww. We love Mad Magazine here at Extents.
There was a... In 1992, Mad Magazine did their parody of Northern Exposure, and there was actually a reference to how the Israeli army is flipping the stereotype of the weak, you know, Nebushi male Jew into a tough image. And I didn't find that quote because I can't find... if anybody's got Mad Magazine from January 1992.
Book and Comic Emporium on Granville Street.
I looked there. I looked through all their boxes.
That's
how did that make it into a parody of Northern Exposure?
Well, because the lead character is a Nebushi Jew, right? The lead character
of New York stereotype,
right? And so there's, you know, he says, "I'm the stereotype of, you know, the weak intellectual Jew," and somebody said, "Try telling that to the Israeli army."
And actually, Mad Magazine has a lot of really heavy Jewish roots.
Oh, yeah.
With L. Feldstein. Is it Stein or Stein?
Don't know.
Can be pronounced either way?
There are names which... I think it's more often Stein, but there are some people who are Stein, and it's pronounced...
Apparently, he refused to tell people. It's just to give people a hard time.
Right.
Is it Stein or Stein? I don't know. And Harvey Kurtzman and Will Elder.
Well, I think there's definitely a scholarly essay or a book somewhere about the influence of the Jewish sensibility on comics.
Well, Mad Magazine probably is one of the things that helped introduce Yiddish to such a wide sector of society.
Mm-hmm. And
well, EC, EC Comics.
Well, EC, well, the creators, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking more Mad because L. Feldstein had more of a direct influence there as far as the controlling reins. I should say, but he had a pretty big influence on that EC stuff, too.
Is Port Sabisi, is that Jewish or is that Polish? That was something that showed up in Mad all the time. I think it's Polish for aspirin.
I don't know that word.
Port Sabisi.
Port Sabisi. Sounds like a vacation spot. Let's go to Port Sabisi. Now, we have some more music. We have Joni Mitchell. I had a question and my brain like totally farted and forgot it. So I think I might put on music to try and get my brain back together. A couple of announcements, actually. I'll make a quick announcement. Tomorrow, Art School Confidential's out in theaters.
Wow.
About time. Daniel Clowes giving up on comics and making the Hollywood big bucks.
And Terry Zwigoff?
Terry Zwigoff, yes. Zwigoff, who also directed Ghost World, written by Daniel Clowes, and Crumb, the Crumb documentary about the lovely Crumb family.
It's funny, because Art School Confidential is like a one-page strip, right?
Three pages. Three or four, yeah.
They expanded on it in, they've added a murder mystery or something.
Yeah, it's and the funny thing is, he actually, when he wrote it, I read a little piece on his comments on it. It's like he recolored for the there's an Art School Confidential book came out, and it's all the script and whatever. In the back, there's a copy of the thing that he colored for that book, and he didn't color it till they actually after they made the movie. And he's like, "Oh, I forgot all this stuff. I should have used that in the movie. It's 4 pages. Why don't you read it when you do the screen?" Does that sound bad? Does that sound?
See, mean? You should see that before the grad show and then quit.
I don't know, man. I think I'm gonna get my diploma.
Okay.
Colin's a bad influence on everyone. So there's
I think Daniel Klaus actually said the same thing, is that he finished art school and he felt really dumb about that because all the great comic creators drop out of art school.
Well, he went to the Pratt Institute in New York.
Oh.
The prestigious Pratt. He went for free. Apparently, like, he got someone to pay for it. I don't know. Some sugar daddy. Some comic book sugar daddy. And, I think he shared a room with George Pratt, no relation to the original Pratt, and a bunch of other really incredible artists went there, but no art school for me. I'm just a critic. Another announcement is on Saturday, it's free comic book day, people. Do you like free stuff?
Yeah!
I like free stuff. Go to your local comic book store and get free comics.
Yay!
Yay! I'll be at RX Comics that day because the guy who's running it has a wedding to go to, and I promised I'd cover it for him for the day. So if you want to meet me and throw something at me, you can come and visit at RX Comics. I'll be there.
You can pick up a free comic and then throw it at Robin.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of hoping money. Throw money
oh,
at
fine.
Me.
Hey, it's free.
It's free. What you decide
not
to do
all
with
the
it,
comics are free, just some of the comics
yeah,
are free.
Don't go in and go and like find the most expensive Silver Age thing sitting on the wall. There will be a select section from different publishers, and there's also a lot of like neat independent stuff. Last year I got a Paul sampler from what's his name series, I can't remember it, the Paul series from Dawn and Quarterly by the friend.
Oh, that guy
Michel Rebagliati. Michel great sure. Stuff. You're all looking at me like I'm on glue right now.
Are you?
No.
Oh.
And don't forget, we have podcasts now, crowncommission.com/inkstuds. This will be up there probably in about a week, as soon as I get it transferred over to the guy that puts it up. And, you know, you can take a listen here, and we'll have the live journal, inkstuds.livejournal.com. And we have Joni Mitchell. Why Joni Mitchell?
I have always loved Joni Mitchell a lot. I like kind of old music. I listen to lots of 60s and 70s stuff. And Joni Mitchell has, you know, helped me through some tough times. And she's Canadian.
Oh, that's right. I gotta check off the CanCon box. Not only
and the FemCon.
Oh, the FemCon box has been checked off. Have no worries there. And the song we're listening to is You
dork.
Turn Me On, I'm a Radio. You can tell us why it's funny after we listen to the song, I think.
Because it's the radio.
Oh.
I'm a little bit corny, I'm a wildflower waiting for you. Broadcasting tower waiting for you. And I'm sending you this signal here. Hope you can pick it up loud and clear. I know you don't like weak women, you get bored so quick. And you don't like strong women, cause they're hip to your tricks. It's been for me, then tune me out. Cause honey, who needs the static? It hurts the the head, and you wind up cracking, and the day goes dismal from reckless party to the sign of prayer. What a sorry face you get to wear. I'm gonna tell you again now, if you're still listening there, if you're driving into town with the dark love above you, dialing the number who's bound to love you. If you're lying on the beach with the trances to call,
Studs, CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. It is 2:38, 2:39, and we are talking about Jobnik, exclamation point, joined by Miriam Lubicki, a American expatriate who moved to Israel, joined the army, and came to Canada to go to Emily Carr. What an odd life story right there. You're in your 20s, and you've got, like, what some people have in a lifetime.
Yeah, I hope it'll last me. You know, I don't know what more adventures I'm going to be having. It'd be nice to have more adventures, but I like Vancouver. I might stay here.
Aww.
Vancouver's a good city.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's nice. The weather's beautiful outside today, in case, you know, you're relying on CITR for your weather information. Yeah, I think the weather's above freezing, and there's a sun in the sky. I didn't see any clouds. That's about as accurate as I'm getting.
Yeah, the past little while, it's been really beautiful.
Good. So, Colin had a question about your service.
Well, I was just, I read the first few issues of Jobnik, and it's not exactly, you didn't seem to have a particularly glamorous job in the armed forces.
No, I sorted mail, basically. I was a secretary in the infirmary on a tank training base. And they didn't really need a secretary. They hadn't had a secretary before me. And so there were, I would make copies for people. I would make Xeroxes, and I would sort the mail. And sometimes that was it.
And they never trained you on tanks or...
No.
Heavy weapons or...
My basic training was 2.5 weeks long, and everybody in my basic training was going off to be secretaries. Like, it was all girls, and we were all going off to be secretaries. So that was the most lackadaisical, like, they didn't even pretend. They didn't even pretend that we were, you know, big, tough military people. Like, we learned how to stand in line, we barely learned how to march, we ran, like, once, and we had Uzis for about a week.
And Israeli Uzis are supposed to be the best.
Except in Israel, Uzi is a girly gun. Like, you don't want an Uzi. You want an M16.
The Uzi was the best gun in, like, 1967. They're second-line weapons nowadays.
Like you said, the girly guns.
Yep. They're little.
Remember that, gun fanatics. If you're using Uzis, you're girly. Get yourself an M16, damn it.
That's right.
CITR does not suggest people buy guns and use them to shoot people.
It will not make you more attractive.
But smoking, on the other hand, that does wonders.
So did you find much in common with the people in Israel? Growing up in the States?
I did feel really different than people there. I guess I had just sort of human things in common. But I did feel like when I was in the army, I don't know. It's not really easy to explain, but also because the time I was in the army was the time that there was a giant flare-up of violence in Israel, and that gets, you know, touched on in the books. That I joined the army in August of 2000, and in September of 2000 is when, you know, Sharon went on the walk at the at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and, you know, riots started that basically went on in one form or another. You know, at first it was mostly rioting, and then there was lots of terrorism and retaliation and, you know, vicious
the
cycles.
Second Intifada.
Yes, that September 2000 when the Second Intifada started. And so I had been in the army 1 month at the time. And I had been in Israel for 2 years before that, which were two, like, extremely quiet years in terms of Israel. And so I was completely in shock, and I would get, like, really freaked out and, you know, paranoid. And Israelis were just like, yeah, this is the sort of thing that happens.
That's something I noticed in your book, is that you touch on, is that how desensitized people are to what's happening around them. It's like, I couldn't imagine having, like, you know, Surrey, parts of Surrey blowing up, you know, and that's probably, like, you know, the geographical relation to some of the situations. Like, yeah, on the other side of this wall, you know, something's exploding.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, especially in the army, like, people, the way that they deal with it is becoming completely insensitive, you know, and really dark humor. And really, you know, not talking about it also. Like, those would be the three ways of coping with this sort of thing.
I can definitely see that as a coping mechanism when you've stuck so much tragedy in, right in your face. You kind of just shut down and just do what you can with it, I guess.
Yeah.
Did you find that... I know it's like you're reaching out to your friends and this and kind of going like, you know, oh my god. People are just like, you know, what?
Yeah.
And that's pretty accurate.
Yep. Like, I, you know, there's a conversation in one of the books, which is also actually close to a conversation that I had, that I was telling, you know, a guy that I was dating at the time, that I'm really freaked out about it. And he's like, if you were Israeli, you wouldn't be freaking out about this. So, I mean, what a way to make somebody feel better. You know, oh, it's because you're an imposter. That's why.
Aww. That's not nice. Now, four issues. When did the first issue come out, and when's the next issue coming out?
The first issue, it was like 2.5 years ago. It's gone through a couple of permutations, because there are two stories in the first issue that I wrote at different times and then redrew at one point. So I guess 2003 is what it says. So I come out right now with basically an issue, two issues a year, and I'm hoping to speed that up a bit.
And these are self-published?
Yep.
From Real Gone Girls.
Real Gone Girl Studios at realgonegirl.com. That's
right. What was that again?
Realgonegirl.com is the website where you can order all my comics as well as my t-shirts and original artworks and everything.
Have you thought of approaching a publisher with the...
Yes, let's talk about this. I've read up on your live journal, sorry.
Oh, no. Yes, I every so often, like whenever I finish an issue, which as I said is not all that frequently, I will send it out to more alternative type publishers. And I've gotten some nice responses and some really, really encouraging responses. But, you know, as of yet, not, you know, yes, so far. I am planning after issue 5 to collect them into a volume. And so that would be the time when I would most really like to have a publisher. But if not, you know, I'll self-publish a graphic novel.
Now, some of the, you posted some of the replies. Are you comfortable with me talking about them here, the replies you've gotten? I won't say publishers, but some of the replies.
Yeah.
Like, some of it seemed just not to get it.
Uh-huh.
Like, I noticed, like, one, you know, saying, go to the Anti-Defamation League, or whatever.
What?
Yeah.
It actually, yeah.
I was pretty surprised reading that, and do they really get it? Do you feel like, some people look at this as, like, the opposite of Joe Sacco's Palestine?
Well, it's something that I think about, that, you know, I compare it in my head sometimes to Palestine. But, I mean, as far as the story it tells, it's really quite different. I mean, it's a personal story.
Yeah, it's not
kind
political.
Of a coming-of-age story, yeah, and it's much less political. And it's, you know, not out there to, you know, tell people what to think or, you know, inform people as far as, like, more about the mood sort of thing than about, you know, facts on the ground, as they say. And I do feel... people are, you know, interested in it because of that different angle, but they also are afraid of it because they're like, you know, is this the wrong political stance? You know, is this too Zionist? You know, is this going to get us in trouble?
Well, that's what I'm wondering, is like people are just afraid to do something like this because given current political climates, you know, like I see, like, it's a lot easier for a book like Palestine to come out because, like, liberally speaking, like liberal political correctness, it's easy to talk. It's more accepted to talk about that kind of topic, the Palestine struggle, yep,
rather than have a sympathetic portrayal of Israeli soldiers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that I think that that's ballsy to do that in one aspect, but the other aspect is to keep in mind that it's not political. Is that this is like a story, like you said, a coming of age, awakening of identity.
Yep.
Is that okay?
Yes. Well, one of the things that struck me about the story is that it seems like you found out about things that were going on the same way we do through television.
Yes. The base, the army base that is in the comic book, you know, Israel is a small country, but half of it is desert, which is almost uninhabited, and a lot of it is actually military. Like, it's kind of, I don't know, in the U.S., the state of Nevada, outside of Las Vegas, is basically all military shooting ranges.
Yeah.
And secret places and places you can't go. And kind of the south of Israel was like that. And on the base where I was stationed, and, you know, the base in the comic book, it's in the middle of absolutely nowhere in the south. Like, we were so not in danger, like, from anywhere. You know? And so I was in the army, which made me kind of more engaged because it was the army carrying out these operations, but it was just this, its own little bubble where, you know, you couldn't see any of the places from where I was, where, you know, anybody, anything would have been taking place. And so I was actually much more in danger when I would go home to Jerusalem on the weekends.
I couldn't imagine living like a situation like living in Jerusalem, where terrorism and that kind of aspect is such a big part of life there. It's just having that military, like, in Jerusalem, is there a big military presence? Like, I kind of get that feeling from some portrayal of life, daily life there.
Not really. It's hard to say because I probably got desensitized to, like, seeing, like, when I would first go to Israel. When I was still living in the U.S. and being, you know, a teenager, and I would go to visit, I would totally get freaked out if I were riding on the bus, you know, next to a soldier with an automatic weapon, you know. But I did kind of get desensitized to that after a while, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, he's got a gun, that's okay. But I think Jerusalem, it's not so much the military presence, it's just the fact that it is really kind of hyper tense atmosphere. Like, you'll have, that's the biggest concentration of the ultra-Orthodox in Israel, you know, as well as having a very significant, you know, Arab and Palestinian population, and just having all sorts, and it's really...
And the wacko Christians.
Yeah, the wacko Christians, but they, I don't know, I think they're, they make some noise occasionally, but, yeah, there are wacko Christians as well. So, yeah, Jerusalem was a very intense place to live. But if you, you know, want to be in Israel and in all the intensity, I guess Jerusalem is where you go.
Now, your culture and religion, obviously, big part of your life.
Yeah.
So what do you think, now this is totally way off topic, what do you think is the situation with someone like Madonna, who's kind of taken something and just totally exploited it and turning it into... you know, like a Hollywood machine?
It makes me feel kind of weird. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't own Judaism, and, you know, nobody owns Judaism, but, it, like, I guess she has a tattoo that I saw in one of her videos, and it says, love, and what that means is no in Aramaic. I don't think she knows that.
So
I guess
it's the Hebrew love?
It's
or is it the Arabic no?
It's like Lamed Aleph, so it's like love, and that's what it says in Hebrew. And Lo is no in Hebrew, but love is no in Aramaic, which is written in Hebrew characters.
Oh.
And so then, you know, somebody said, oh, it's a magical name of God, which gives you magical powers.
Madonna with magical powers.
Okay, this is a comic book radio show, so we say superpowers here.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Super yes. Donna.
But, you know, there she did that video for, like, the James Bond movie where yeah. she's putting on the tefillin. She or it looks like she's putting on the phylacteries, the leather strip that Jewish men wrap around their arms for prayer. And that video just hit me as really quite weird because it was a music video and it did have like this Jewish religious imagery. And it also showed this tattoo, which said no in Aramaic. And I guess also the things that are called Kabbalah bracelets now. Actually, you can get those outside the Western Wall, and basically, there's old ladies who hang around, and if you give them charity, they'll tie this bracelet around your wrist. And it has nothing to do with Kabbalah. It's kind of just to do with Jewish superstition and the evil eye. And so basically, giving charity is something that's going to, you know, be karmically good for you. And so they give you this little string, you know.
That meanwhile, they pay some Kabbalah center $50 for this red string.
Yep. So, I mean, a lot of my friends, at least before, you know, if you visited Israel, you'd come back with a red string around your wrist. It just means that, you know, you gave somebody a couple of pennies at the Western Wall, and they decided to tie a string around your wrist, and now it means Kabbalah.
Yeah.
I was wondering, have you done a thought about translating Jobnik into Hebrew and getting it published in Israel?
I've thought about it. I think that, at first I thought that it's not such a unique story because it's about a girl who goes to the army, you know, and most girls do that in Israel. But I still think but it is very much an outsider's perspective. It's about an American girl and how she tries to, you know, acclimatize to the culture. And so I have thought about it, and I have also thought about, you know, trying to sell it also in English because many Israelis have pretty good English. But eventually, yeah, hopefully.
Now, we got to close up soon because I noticed our Warren Zevon track is very long. So I have a couple quick questions. Once Jobnik's done, or even before Jobnik's done, is there any other kind of comic project you'd like to work on?
I'm always interested in various things. The Towards a Hot Jew is not part of Jobnik, but I also sell it as a comic book. And I've done things like interviews with people and then made comics out of them. And so I'm always interested in different styles and different stories. Jobnik takes up most of my attention. I get into different stuff. And I also would like to, you know, collaborate with writers at some point, although I'm not sure that I'm quite there yet, that I can work with somebody else.
It's a process. It's a learning process, I guess.
Yeah.
So what stores can we find Jobnik in?
Well, it is in RX Comics, and as you mentioned, that, you know, you will be there on Saturday.
I will be there on Saturday. Come by, visit, throw things at me.
Every so often, they have a couple at Golden Age.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I had a bunch there, and then they sold out, and then they didn't want to stock more, which is weird, because they sold out. But they have, I think, the most recent issue still at Golden Age, and if not, you should ask for it.
Golden Age doesn't normally carry small press.
No, it doesn't.
I was like, wow. Wowie zowie.
And also, Comic Shop on 4th in Kitsilano, and Lucky's on Main Street.
Lucky's. Our good friend Lucky's. Hello, Gabe. You're probably not listening, but we like you anyways. Thank you very much for coming, Miriam.
Thank you.
Good luck on your show on Saturday, your grad show. I'll understand.
Sunday?
Oh, it's Sunday. But Sunday. Saturday you'll be spending, I guess, all day prepping.
Well, Saturday night's the opening.
So. Oh, okay. Is it?
Well, there we go.
That's a mob scene.
That's a mob scene. Maybe I'll go by half drunk after my meeting with someone that night. Yep. And be like, woo! Art!
I just want to mention again, another place you can buy my comics is realgonegirl.com.
Oh, there we go.
That's right.
Plug it.
My website.
Do you have your paintings on there as well?
I've got some of my illustrations on there, and links to my blog, and also comics and t-shirts. I also make t-shirts that can be viewed on the website, realgonegirl.com.
I highly recommend checking out Miriam's stuff. You're an up-and-comer here.
Hooray.
Hooray! Just don't be one of those people that stop once everyone starts to notice.
Well, I hope not to.
I hope not. Okay, Inkstead, CITR 101.9. Up next, we got some hippity hop with Rhymes and Reason boys. Boys! Thanks for coming. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's 3 o'clock, and
What time is it?